Well, let's go ahead and get started. I'd like to start with a commercial. This book right here, Christianity for Skeptics, is one of my favorite books. We do a lot of selling in this book. The reason it sells is because it has color pictures. I feel like a Vanna White here. But Christianity for Skeptics, it's a wonderful presuppositional apologetics book. Excellent. It's not a real technical book. It's not necessary for the very beginner, but it has a couple of chapters on Islam, where did God come from, why do bad things happen. But if you want just straight answers books, here's a great one from Gracian Ministries International. And these are all by donation. It has a suggested price back here, but if you don't have that, we'll take whatever you have. You don't have to eat until dinner. But so this has some wonderful questions and how to answer them in here. For those of you who are pro-life, and you all are, Randy Alcorn, one of the best speakers on the sanctity of human life. 21 chapters. Each chapter is a challenge the abortionist will give you in how to answer it. These sell for $4. Or if you only have four, we'll take five. children's answers books. We have three different ones out there. Questions children have actually asked and how to answer them so they can understand them. Then we have DVDs. We have five different DVDs. They'll go for $5 a piece. So we have those. And then a great, apologetics book, Ask Them Why. The first part of the book gives you background information. The second part of the book goes into simulated conversations showing you how to do this. So great book there on Ask Them Why. That's the end of the commercial. So now let's answer some hard questions. Let's start with this one. How can the first 3 days of creation be literal 24-hour periods if the sun was not there until day four? Anybody have an answer?
When God said that he made light, he made light. So the morning and the evening were day.
But we didn't have the sun yet.
You don't need the sun to produce light.
Very good. Okay, let's start here. That's the key part. For $50, yes. No. I have a lot of PowerPoint slides. I'll put all these on there free. All my PowerPoint slides you can download for free. I have a lot of my talks out there. PowerPoint slides are already there. They're all for free. Download them. And once you've downloaded them, they're yours. You can change them, do whatever you want.
That way people want information yes. later.
Yes. But let's start here. What's the definition of a year? Where do we get 365 and a quarter days for a year? Time it takes the earth to go around the sun. That's what you were going to say, wasn't it? Okay, you get to do the next one. Where does a month come from? Almost. Moon, yes, very good. The time it takes the moon to go around the earth. I knew you knew all about astronomy. You look like an astronomy expert. And those are both astronomical events, aren't they? Where do we get a day from now? Yes. Real close, but not quite. Real close, though. It's one of those objects.
The moon.
No? What other?
The Earth.
Very good. It's the time it takes the Earth to rotate once on its axis. Wow. The children are winning this contest here. So do we need the sun for a day?
No.
No, we don't. It's the definition of a day is how long it takes the Earth to rotate once on its axis. That's pretty easy, isn't it? But we do need to get to this light thing here. Thank you for bringing that up. Let's read what it says in Genesis 1, 3 through 5. That's what he was referencing there. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. So God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So evening and morning were the first day. God explicitly states here, he created light. Now, let's do a little Hebrew lesson. The word for light there is or, O-W-R. What that means is illumination. It's talking about there's a light out there, but it makes no reference to a light source. There's just light there. Can God do that?
Yes.
Okay, I have a trick question. Anybody want to answer it? What side wants to answer this trick question? You volunteer, okay? Don't miss it, because you know what happens if you miss it. Can God do anything? Okay, we got a good one. He can't sin. He can't lie. He can't be God and not God.
Can't create a square triangle.
Right. He can only do what's within his character. So that's a loaded question. You got to be careful how to answer that one. He can't do everything. He can only do those things within his character. So notice the word here, or, O-W-R, that's day one. But on day four, when God creates the sun and calls it light, he uses a different Hebrew word called ma'or, which means luminary, means there's a light source there creating the light. So there's two different Hebrew words here. One just means there's light, but no light source. The other means there's a light source called the sun now giving the light. That's the value of going in and studying the Bible. And you don't have to be a Hebrew scholar to do this. Now, if there was already a day and a night cycle before the sun, then why did God have to make the sun and the stars? We already had a day-night cycle. Why did he have to make the sun and the stars? He answers it right here. Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons for days and years. In other words, why? For signs and seasons, so we'd have a way to tell time. Don't we have a great God here? Did all that just for us? And incidentally, the other thing said up here, what's your first name?
Gary.
He also made it that we don't need the sun and the stars for light. There are many other forms of light, such as electromagnetic waves. So there's all kinds of answers, and we don't need the sun for a day. So our conclusion, the first 3 days of creation were literal 24-hour days. God defined them that way. We don't need the sun for a day. There are many forms of light. God created light, and God is light. So we can answer that one now. So the rest of this conference, if I come up to you and say, how can the first 3 days be real days without the sun, you have to answer it to me. If you cannot answer it to me, you know what's going to happen. Yes. Push-ups are a great cure. They just make the mind work a little faster. Let's go to the next challenge. How could Noah, this is how I hear it a lot, how could Noah fit the millions of creatures on the ark? Does the Bible ever say millions? Yes, go ahead. He didn't pick the biggest ones. In other words, he didn't pick big people like me. I was actually bigger than some of the dinosaurs. I'm so old, some of the people think I saw dinosaurs. Don't laugh so hard over here. Okay, let's look at this. To answer this challenge, we're going to take it in three parts. How did the animals get to the ark? How big was the ark? And how many animals actually needed to go on the ark? Jeez, you've already given us part of it. What's your first name? Georgia. She's already given us part of the answer. Thank you. Now, I could be, can I be just a little bit mean here? She's given us the answer before we got to it. That means she was like a prophetess, wasn't she? Like a prophet. That means if you're a false prophet, we're going to use Old Testament rules here. We get to stone you. Yeah. No, we wouldn't do that. You got too nice of a smile there. Okay, let's look at this. First part, how did the animals get to the ark? Did Noah have to go out in great big rodeo and round up to get them all here? Wow, this is a pretty good group here. God brought them to the ark. Let's read this, Genesis 6, verse 20. Of the birds after the kind, of animals after the kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind, two of every kind will come to you. Thank you. God brings the creatures to Noah. Now, how big was the ark? What did it look like? You got three choices here.
One with the ark in the water.
One with the ark in the water, the bottom one. Okay, that is correct. The other two are the ones we see in Christian bookstores. Unfortunately. Now, if you have one that looks like the second one up there, like the houseboat with giraffe's head sticking out, you have one in your church, in the children's, I see it a lot of times in the children's church, don't take it down. Why? You're going to use it as a teaching tool. What you're going to do is show the children that picture with that big houseboat with the head sticking out, then go to the Bible and read the description of the ark, the dimensions. Then you can draw a picture of what that's supposed to look like. You can do it on the board. It's like a big rectangle. Then give them how long that was. That's about 450 feet long. It's about 1.5 football fields long. Then they're going to see, every time they see a houseboat with giraffe's head sticking out, they're going to say, that's not what the Bible teaches. You're going to use this as a teaching tool. Let's turn the whole thing around. And here's what the Bible says. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. Its width 50 cubits and its height 30 cubits. Does that mean anything to anybody? Okay, good. how do we measure a cubit? Usually, right, from here to about there. My cubit might be a little longer than some of yours. That's about 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. You know, there's something very interesting about that length and width. That length-width ratio have to be the perfect dimensions for floating. How did Noah know that? God told him. He didn't necessarily know. God told him. Noah's Ark size, 1.5 football fields long, 6-to-1 length-width ratio, which is perfect. We build modern barges that way. Not designed to go anywhere because there's nowhere to go. Water's covering everything. Wait a minute now. I have a question here. Anybody know how high Mount Everest is approximately? Oh, go there. 29,000. Just a little over 29,000 feet, about 29 feet high. That's over 5 miles high. You know, if you took the earth and flattened it out, the water would only go about 2 miles high. So how in the world could the water have covered Mount Everest? No, there's still not enough water. Very good. The mountains weren't always that tall. We have very good evidence of rapid mountain growth. See, during that flood, it was a dynamic flood. Tectonic movements, large plates moving back and forth. And geologically what happens sometimes, we'll have something called subduction, where one landmass will go underneath another, raising it up this way. Or they might clash this way and go up. And we have dynamic movements going on, raising these mountains rapidly. Because you know what we find on top of every mountain range on this planet, including Mount Everest? Seashells. And guess what? None of them have legs to walk up there. So it's not designed to go anywhere. The volume, about 1.5 million cubic feet. Does that mean anything to anybody in here? Nope, I just do that. 100,000 square feet of floor space. That's a little bit bigger than your houses, most likely. I think that's even bigger than Bill Gates' house. Equivalent to about 520 railroad cars. Now, I just put all these things up. The most thing that means most to me is about 1.5 football fields long. But we're going to use these railroad cars in just a moment. How can we fit all the creatures on the ark? Well, we need to find out, what does the Bible teach here? You see, Noah was never told to put all the creatures on there. Let's see. Living things with the breath of life is what he put on that ark. That would include the beasts and the cattle, 2- and 4-footed creatures, birds, creeping things like reptiles. Sea creatures were not included because they would have not gone into extinction. Many would have perished during the flood, but not to the point of extinction. Many survived. That's why we find most of the fossils we find are marine creatures, because they died in the oceans, because they can't escape. So let's look at this now. Only 2 of each kind went on the ark. There's 7 of some that he had to do for sacrifices afterward, but 2 of each kind on the ark. We can assume a maximum of about 20,000. That's pretty generous there. 20,000 different kinds, which would be about, 40,000 creatures, male and female. The average size animal in the ark, and we had that earlier, about the size of a sheep. Notice we didn't have to take the big creatures. Nowhere in the Bible say God brought the grandma and grandpa creatures, does it? But that's the picture of the way you see. But that's not what the Bible teaches. Only the young creatures had to go on. So the average double-deck stock car can accommodate about 200 sheep. Okay, we're going to do a little math here. A train pulling 200 cars, therefore, could carry 40,000 sheep. That's 200 cars by 200 equals about 40,000 sheep. It's not too bad. So now we have 200 cars full and 320 cars still available for Noah's family and all their luggage. Think they had a lot of luggage? So far it's looking good. But what about dinosaurs? Were they on the ark? Oh, you can't fit those great big ones on there, can you?
No.
Okay, let's try it. What were you going to say? They would not be on the ark? Let's take this. So far I got 2 no's from that side. Let's see if this side. Yes, this guy's going to say yes. And this side is correct. Dinosaurs were on the ark. Okay, how do we know that? What day did God create the land animals? Day 6. What day did he create Adam and Eve? 6. So dinosaurs and people were living at the same time. Are dinosaurs land-breathing creatures? Yes. they have the breath of life in them. Yes, they did. And Noah had to put all those creatures with the breath of life on the ark. It doesn't say all the creatures except the dragons or behemoth or the dinosaurs. Do we see the word dinosaur in the Bible? No, it wasn't invented until 1841. So it's a fairly new word. There are about 100 known species of dinosaurs. Now, you go out on the internet and read these books, it says about 700. But you know what? They're finding they made a lot of mistakes. Because a little T-Rex doesn't look a whole lot like a full-grown T-Rex. And same for many other dinosaurs. So they're now starting to recalculate how many species of dinosaurs we had. So about 100 known species of dinosaurs, which gives us about 200 dinosaurs, male and female, on the ark. If we put 50 per boxcar, that's only 4 more boxcars, isn't it? So now we have 204 cars full, 316 still empty. Still got a lot of room. Anybody want to go? What about insects, though? Well, let's evaluate this. Insects don't have nostrils or lungs and don't intake air the way we do. Nowhere in the Bible say they had the breath of life. Insects don't have blood like humans or other animals. But some of those insects are very delicate and wouldn't survive a flood. So let's be generous here. Let's say we know we had dinosaurs on there. And they went on the ark, and they came off the ark. But let's put the insects on there also. Let's be very generous here. Insects. Let's put 1 million of them on there. Is that okay? All right? Insects aren't very big. How much room does a pair of ants take? If we give them a 6-inch by 6-inch, that would hold most all the insects, different kinds of insects. That would amount to about 12 boxcars. So now we have 216 full and 304 still empty. So the conclusion is plenty of room to put all those creatures on the ark. The only creatures we know didn't have to go on there were the marine creatures. Yes?
The marines didn't have to go on?
No, we could walk on water. Go ahead. We don't know how that is. They could have spread out more. We don't know how it actually took place on there. But we're just showing a general room here. It may have only put 100 per boxcar. But that capacity. So we really don't know. I'm just doing maximum here. Good question. Thank you, though. So no questions on that. Okay, how can this side over here, how can the first 3 days be real days without the sun? Don't need the sun for a day. How do we measure a day?
Rotation.
Where'd the light come from? God created light. Why did he create the sun then?
Season.
Very good. Thank you. Hope this side's that sharp. Well, let's go to this one. If God created everything, who made God? It's a pretty popular challenge there, isn't it?
Nobody
is the correct answer. Let's go to the next challenge. That skips about 12 slides there. We'll have a lot of time to go back and eat the cookies. I know where they hide them. That's the first thing I do when I get in the morning, find out where are the cookies. That's the important thing, isn't it? Okay, 3 options. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you how to answer this. Who made God? Do a little lesson in science and logic. And the way I'll answer this, say, that is a great question. It's a very good question, valid question. I'm talking to a non-believer. If you're talking to a believer, it's no problem. God is a self-existing eternal being. No beginning, no end. That's what the Bible teaches. But we're talking to a non-believer who's telling us now. And this is your chance to be a witness and get to the gospel. Don't miss it. So I'm going to tell the person that's a great question, compliment, because it is a very valid question. And I'm going to say, I need some information to help give that answer. I need some information from you so I can get a better answer. And I have 3 questions here, or 3 options, where the universe came from. Because if God created everything, first of all, we would see where everything came from. You don't believe God did it. But let me ask these questions. The universe, how did it get here? Well, there's only 3 choices, aren't there? The universe created itself. The universe has always existed. Or it had to be created. Now, what I'm going to show you here, we're going to use a principle. It's called 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. And what we're going to do here is bring down the non-believer strongholds. Bring down their options. So if I can show the first two choices up here are not logical or scientific, then what answer is the only possible answer? Had to be created. And that's what we're going to do. That's 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. Bring down all strongholds and everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. So first of all, I'm going to show they don't have an answer, only we do. That's how I'm going to answer. We will get around to where God came from to them. But first of all, I need to lay a foundation. So let's start with the universe. Could it have created itself? Well, let's ask ourselves the question. Can something create itself?
No.
That's exactly why this is a sharp group. You know, for something to create itself, it means it has to have the power to act before it even exists. How can anything have any power if it does not exist? So that's an illogical statement, something creates itself. Also, what was the cause? We have the law of cause and effect here. It's a very well known scientific law. For every effect, there must be an equal to or greater than cause. If nothing exists, there can be no cause, therefore no effect. And then something people don't think of, if nothing exists, there's no space to pop yourself into existence because space is an entity. The Bible treats it, it says, the fabric of space. It treats it as an entity. So you can't pop yourself into existence because there's no place to pop yourself into existence. Oh, wait a minute. Mike, you forgot something. How many talked about quantum physics last night at dinner? How many like physics? Because physics is fun. You've got to have physics. You practice it every day, physics. It's the study of motion and movement. How many moved to get here? You did physics. And physics is in the Bible. Matter of fact, we're going to talk about one of the most well-known laws in all of science that's mentioned in the Bible, and it's physics. We're going to get to that one in this session here. Quantum fluctuations, they talk about. Where there was nothing, then something popped itself into existence for a fraction of a second and then went away. It's called a quantum fluctuation. You know what that is? It's another name for magic. Something cannot pop itself into existence if nothing exists. One, it can't have any energy. You have to start with energy to make that happen. And you can't have energy because nothing exists. And secondly, there's no space to pop yourself into existence. So that's completely illogical. And this statement here, out of nothing comes nothing, for those of you who like a little Latin. So that's a whole matter of faith to believe that something could create itself. Well, let's go to Luke Barnes here. He's one of those astronomers, and we have an astronomer here. Remember who our astronomer is right back there. This is one of your type of people, and this is what he says. Let's be clear. Nothing means no thing. No energy, no quantum vacuum, no gravity, no laws, no potential, no physical properties. As well as some have argued, it is self-contradictory to say the universe can create itself. Because if the universe were able to create itself, it would have had to have existed already and would not need creating anyway. There's a book out there written by a gentleman who says, nothing really doesn't mean nothing. He's taking a lot of heat on that one.
Yeah.
So now we've ruled out the universe created itself. So we got one down. Now let's get the second one. Has the universe always existed? Now we get to the fun part, physics. The second law of thermodynamics. One of the most well-established laws of science. You know where that is mentioned? Almost 2,000 years ago in the Bible. Long before we even discovered it, it was in the Bible. It tells us the whole universe is what? All of creation is running down, groaning. That's a good general description of the second law of thermodynamics. Now, what does thermo mean? Heat, dynamics. Talking about heat dynamics, talking about energy here, running down. How many of you get tired during the day? Right. And if you don't eat or drink, you're going to get more tired, aren't you? See, second law of thermodynamics basically tells us everything is wearing down, running down. But we don't wear down to the point we die because we replenish our energy by eating, sleeping, or getting, and the sun gives us energy. But left to itself, everything is wearing down. What would happen if you parked a car outside and didn't touch it for 30 years? Wouldn't run because the battery is going to wear down. And some places you leave it, it's going to get very rusty. It's not going to, will it improve? No, it's not going to improve. It's only going to wear down. So the second law of thermodynamics, that's what we're going to talk about here. Everything is wearing down. And I want to use something called no refills. We're going to keep this very simple. So when we get done, everyone here is going to be a physicist. Physics is part of astronomy, too. You know, we have astrophysicists. You'd probably like to be one of those, wouldn't you? Yes. You like math? Say yes. Kind of, okay. Any athletes here? Like to run. I help coach, and all my coaching is based on the principles of physics. The motion. And if you understand the principle of physics, you can be a better athlete and a better coach. So now physics is getting funner, isn't it? Okay. I want to use an example here called no refills. Okay? Somebody's going to give you a brand new car or a any car. Would anybody want one of those cars? Which one would you like? In the middle? Yes, I wouldn't mind that one either. Matter of fact, any one of these would be worth it. What would you like?
I would probably take all of them.
All of them, okay. Okay, we'll say that's okay too. So somebody's going to give you a car, and you get to choose any car you want, and it's free. And everything for the lifetime of this car is free. Anything goes wrong, it is fixed for free. Pretty good deal, isn't it? Did anybody read the small print up there? You didn't read the small print. You can read that. What does it say?
One tank of gas and a refill. Something amount of energy. I can't read that last.
One tank of gas, no refills. In other words, you have a finite amount of energy. All you ever get for the lifetime of this car is one tank of gas. No refills ever. So what happens after you've driven this car about 300 miles? You've used up all the gas. In other words, you've used up all the energy that is used to propel this vehicle, haven't you? That's the gasoline. It's the energy that drives this car. So no refills. What are you going to do with the car now?
Sell it.
Sell it, yeah. Or sell it for parts and even get more. Or just to let it sit there and rust away. It can't do any more work for you, can it? Can't do anything. Can't go anywhere because there's no more energy for it. That's the principle of the second law of thermodynamics. It starts with a full tank of gas, which is the energy. As you drive, that energy gets used up, and if you can't refill it, that's the end of it. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Now, let's go to outer space. Stars. Stars have a finite amount of energy. What do stars do? It's called thermonuclear fusion. I put that up there just for our astronomer. What is that? It's burning our lighter elements into heavier elements. Okay, let's do our chemistry people here. What does H stand for?
Hydrogen.
How about HE?
Helium.
Helium. C?
Carbon.
I gave that one away. And how about FE?
Iron.
Iron. Okay, we got some good chemistry people. We got a science-minded group here. So that's what they do. They burn their lighter elements into heavier elements. And when all their hydrogen or all their hydrogen helium is all burned up, all the energy is burned up, guess what happens to them? Most of them will begin to gravitationally collapse inward and then explode into what we call a great big nova or supernova. That's what happens to stars. Okay, so we got that down. Now, we live in a finite universe. I'm not going to entertain multiple universes, folks. That's being beyond Star Trek fantasy. There's only one universe. The reason the evolutionists created more universes is because they couldn't explain this one. So they use another one to try and explain this one. So don't even go there. So we have a finite universe, meaning there's nothing outside this universe, not counting God on this one, we know he's everywhere, that's adding any energy into this universe. So it's got a finite amount of energy. And if the universe had no beginning then, based on the second law of thermodynamics, which is well established, known to be work everywhere, this universe would be out of energy. Everything would have used up all its energy and we'd be at a virtual standstill. The fact that I see you moving here is powerful evidence this universe had to have a beginning. What does infinity? Well, that's what we're talking about. If the universe had no beginning, it's an infinite number of years old. What that means is time without end, Latin for boundless, without end, unlimited extent of time. Now, infinity is not a number. It's a concept for you math people. You understand that. See, you've got all, that's why you like math. So let's look at this. If the universe had no beginning and stars are burning up their energy, after about 100 million years, all our supergiant stars would have gone. They'd all been gone. Because supergiant stars tend to burn up their energy faster. Making sure she's making sure I get this right. After about 10 billion years, according to evolutionists, our sun would have, all the stars like our sun would have burned up. After about 100 billion years, every star in the universe would be gone. Certainly after a trillion years, there'd be no stars left. So if the universe had no beginning, all these stars would have been burned up, all gone. Has anybody seen any stars lately? Yes. You've seen a star? That's powerful evidence this universe had to have a beginning. Cannot be infinite number of years old. Oh, wait a minute, Mike. Wait just a moment. You forgot something. New stars are forming all the time. Where'd you get that from, Mike? Right out of the textbooks. And everybody believes what's in the textbooks, don't we? Okay. This is what I read in the textbooks and a lot of the astronomy journals. New stars are forming all the time. How does that happen? We get these great big dust and gas clouds out there called nebula, and they rotate around and around and around. As they continue to rotate around and around, they begin to gravitationally collapse inward due to the rotation, and they continue to collapse in until they form, get so dense, they form a brand new star. And there's a technical term for that process. It is called baloney. Anyone that's had a physics 101 class knows that will not happen. Because as a gas and dust cloud rotates around and around, and we can measure this, it will begin to gravitationally collapse inward due to the rotation. But as it does so, it generates something called heat pressure. And we can measure that heat pressure is always stronger than the gravity, and it will always cause that cloud to expand outward. No one has ever observed a new star form. And based on the principles of science, physics, they will not form. Yes, that's what they do. They will tell you all the time they're forming, but no one's seen one.
One just formed right now.
Yes. Well, I've done some calculation. I have to increase the numbers here because they've increased their number of stars in the universe. But if we gave the universe 30 billion years, it's only about, 14.6 billion years. But if we gave them a 30 billion years, based on the number of stars they estimate are in our universe, every second for 30 billion years, 32,700 stars would have to form. And no one's seen one of them. That's not good credibility. Don DeYoung has a PhD in physics. The complete birth of a star has never been observed. Jason Lyle, PhD in astrophysics. If star formation has never been observed, nor could it truly be observed since the process is supposed to take hundreds of thousands of years, gas in space is very resistant to being compressed into a star. Compression of gas causes an increase in magnetic field strength, gas pressure, and angular momentum. The evolutionists cannot get around those. Therefore, now, why do they continue telling their story? Because of their basic worldview. Remember we talked a little bit about that yesterday? Their presupposition or worldview is evolution must be true, and you cannot have a creator God. Everything must have happened by evolution. In other words, the evidence does not matter. Let me give you a classic example, the origin of life. We win that one every time. When I go to NASA and speak in front of the scientists, I always talk about the origin of life. It's a winner. They're talking about in our textbooks how life originated 3.5 billion years ago. You know, our best scientists in the world cannot even make one single biological protein. We don't have to talk about DNA, RNA, organelles, ribosomes. How many got excited when I said those words? Yeah, it's always some people. Yeah. One small protein, our best scientists in the world cannot even make that. It's over right there. Darwin's dead because he can't have any change until he can get the first living cell. And we can't get a protein. And every cell has thousands and thousands of proteins in it. See, we win. Scientifically, we win. It's just, we're not being told the truth. That's why we can teach that. The origin of life would be a great subject to teach in Sunday school. It's not hard. All you can do is talk about proteins and amino acids. Now, I said, how many have heard of amino acids? Yeah, I said amino acids, not mean old acids. We know some people have those, but we're talking about amino acids here. So stars don't form. And I've got quotes from many, many astronomers and physicists saying exactly this, including Nobel Prize winners. Stars don't form. Something's wrong with our public education system. Conclusion. The universe cannot be infinite or it would be out of energy. So what does that leave us? That's a matter of faith. That leaves us here. Now we must answer the question where God came from. Now that I've neutralized their possibilities, brought their strongholds down, now I have enough information to say, if God created the universe, who created God? Well, who made God? Let's start here. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. There's the beginning of space, time, and matter right there. It's the beginning of everything, what the Bible teaches. Now, nowhere in the Bible are there any arguments for the existence of God. You won't find them anywhere. Why? The Bible assumes God exists. In Genesis 1:1, it assumes God already exists before anything existed, space, time, and matter. And God's existence is evident to everybody. There's no person in this world that doesn't know God exists. Even the atheist. Because what does the Bible teach? Romans 1:19 and 20. God has given us all the evidence, and no one has an excuse for not believing. So why don't they believe? The Bible answers that question also. They willfully reject God. What does the Bible say in Psalm 53:1? Fools say in their hearts, there is no God. Non-believers must assume the universe came into existence out of nothing. By faith. So where did God come from? Here it is, Exodus 3:14. And God said to Moses, I am who I am. What is that telling us? He's the self-existing God. That's what that means. Eternality. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. That's our answer. What is the atheist going to say? Well, I don't accept that. Well, then you have to believe by faith also, don't you? Haven't we already destroyed their arguments? The universe cannot create itself, cannot be self-existent. So they come back at us and say, well, ultimately we believe by faith, don't we? Because we weren't there to see any of this. We believe by faith. But ultimately, the atheist also has to believe by faith. See, we've neutralized the whole attack there. By starting with that, taking down their strongholds, they can't come back at us. They say, well, you got faith. Well, you do too. And by the way, could you show me any observational and repeatable evidence where this universe came from? Can't do it. It's a faith issue. See, that's the attack. That's how I try and answer questions. Make sure that in the end, if we don't have an answer, they don't have an answer either. Because that's the next big one. Distant starlight. If the universe is only thousands of years old, how could the distant starlight have reached the Earth? In other words, there's galaxies that appear millions of light years out there. That means it should take millions of years for that light to reach the Earth. But if the universe is only 6,000 years old, how'd the light get here? Okay. I'm going to show you how to answer this without getting technical. If you want to, we can do a little gravitational time dilation. We'll go into that a little bit. How many want to hear that? Okay, we got a few. And you're going to explain it to me. Was it Georgia? You'll explain it to everybody, won't you? Thank you for letting me use you. Okay. Let's get some clarification questions. I'm going to do the same principle. I'm going to set them up that they don't have an answer also. You see, here's the situation. We only have possible answers. We don't have observable evidence how that light got here. We have, Dr. Russell Humphreys yesterday talked about there's five different solutions we have for this, but they're only possible answers. They could all be wrong. So if we give what's called a possible answer, and that's all the audience hears, we lose. Why? Because the evolutionists get a pass. They walk away as if they have the answers, and all we have is possible answers. So what I'm going to do is break down their strongholds again and show they have to believe by faith and we have to believe by faith. That's the tactic I'm going to use. So clarification questions. To help me understand how that light got here, I need some information, astronomy information. Where did the matter come from to create the universe? Can they answer that one? We just went through that. They can't answer that. So that's a matter of faith, isn't it? Where did the stars come from? Can they answer that one? No. Theoretically, it would take a star to make a star. So where'd the first star come from? They can't answer those things. So that's a faith issue. Now, the other question I'm going to ask them is, why does the universe have a homogeneous temperature? And what does that mean? Well, it's about 2.7 Kelvin, which is pretty cold. That's about minus 454 Fahrenheit. Is that pretty cold? Yes. You're an ice cube in a fraction of a second. For those of you who like to speak in Celsius, it's about minus 270. But Kelvin is absolute. 2.7 is close to absolute zero. That is cold. Now, what do I mean by homogeneous temperature? Everywhere we look out there in space, I'm not counting the stars, but the space out there, is the same temperature. It's the same temperature, about 2.7 Kelvin. Now, how could that be? The only way that can happen is everything out there is the same temperature, is all the light energy has to have interacted with all the other light energy in the universe. Let me do an illustration. Okay? Got a cup of cold water and a cup of hot water. What's the difference between these two cups as far as molecular movement? Right. That's what were you going to say? One's hot and one's cold. I like that. Says it for me. Right up here. In the hot cup, the molecules are moving faster. That's what heat energy is. The faster they move, the greater the heat energy. In the cold cup, the molecules are moving slower. So if I pour the hot cup into the cold cup, guess what's going to happen? The fast-moving molecules are going to bump into the slow ones. What does that do to the slow ones? This means what does it do to the fast ones? And when all the molecules have interact with every other molecule in there, they're all moving the same speed. That's called a homogeneous temperature. In order to have the universe be a homogeneous temperature, all the light energy in the entire universe has to have interacted. But guess what? There's not enough time for that. You see, here's our Earth. We can go out 15 billion light years out here, and we go out this way 15 billion light years. There's not enough time in 14 billion years for the light energy over here to have interacted with the light energy over here. So why do we have a homogeneous temperature? Oh, he created it all at the same time, but for the evolutionist non-believer, they're not going to accept that. So what they do? They invent something. It's called inflation. And what that does, what that says, in the initial stages of the Big Bang, it expanded. It was expanding faster than the speed of light, and then it slowed down to the speed of light. Is there any observable evidence for that? No, it's just what we call a rescue mechanism. They make something up. And there's no evidence for that whatsoever. So ultimately, they have to believe that by faith too, don't they? So let's look at this now. The whole idea of evolution is a matter of faith. Where did the matter come from? See, if they can't tell me where the stars came from, then we don't have a light source, do we? If we don't have a light source, why do we need to talk about light reaching us? So creationists have possible answers, for example, gravitational and time dilation. But here's where we ultimately have to stand. By faith, we understand the worlds were framed by the Word of God. In other words, ultimately, we have to say by faith. Don't ever be ashamed to say that, because what does the book of Hebrews also tell us? Without faith, it's impossible to please God. We may find some answers, but right now, all we have are possible answers. So, what do we know about the universe? Well, we have faith that God created all things, including the light reaching the earth. Evolution, origin of the universe, faith, origin of stars, faith. It's all a matter of faith. So what have I just done? I've neutralized their whole attack, haven't I? Now, they can't walk away saying, looking like they have answers and we don't. They walk away, they have faith. We walk away, we have faith. It levels the whole playing field. I didn't have to get real scientific, did I? We have a reasonable faith, don't we? They have to have faith in miracles with no miracle maker. Yeah, they have to have more faith. Mm-hmm. See, this is what you get down to the real issues. I like the science, but I keep it in my hip pocket if I need to use it to bring down strongholds. I want to get back to the real issues and level the playing field. In other words, we need to be smart about these things. If all you do is give a scientific answer, that's the possible answer, and they don't have to say anything, you lose. If we have time, we'll do time dilation at the end. Okay, if dinosaurs lived millions of years ago, how do you fit them into the Bible? Because they're pretty big to get in that book, aren't they?
You don't.
They didn't live millions of years ago.
Okay, good. He caught a problem with the statement there. This is what's called a loaded question. It's got a hidden premise in there. The premise is dinosaurs lived millions of years ago. See, if you try and answer it and don't address that, you're going to get yourself in trouble. Thank you for that. Nowhere in the Bible say millions of years. The Bible teaches they were created day six, same time as human beings. So let's look at that. See, I was there. There's an actual photograph of me with dinosaurs. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. That was day six of creation, same day he created Adam and Eve. You know something? The book of Job. So the Bible teaches man and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Behemoth. Who's heard of behemoth? Yes. I'm going to give you a brief description. Eats grass like an ox. You know what that means? It's not an alligator, because what do alligators eat? Us. So it's not an alligator. Moves his tail like a cedar. That's a pretty big tree. His bones are like beams of bronze. So we're talking about a plant eater. Big tail, big bones. And his ribs are like bars of iron. That's a description of behemoth. Job chapter 40, verses 15 through 18. Okay, there's a Lebanon cedar. We can't use our cedars over here. They're a little smaller, but there's a Lebanon cedar. Look at the trunk of that tree. That is a huge trunk. And there's a tail like a cedar. Pretty big tail, isn't it? Could that have been an elephant? How about hippopotamus? You know the sad thing is, a lot of Bibles, I look at the commentary at the bottom of the page, says this is a hippopotamus. I think they're ashamed of God's word when they do that. Instead, the commentary is not the inspired word of God, and they can be wrong. There's something more like a tail with a cedar, something like an apatosaurus. So right there we have what could be a good description of a dinosaur right there in the Bible. Also, since the 1990s, what do we know about dinosaurs? We found soft tissue on dinosaur bones. You can actually take this tissue and stretch it, and it comes back together again. It's like fresh tissue. Can that last for millions of years? Not at all. Unfossilized dinosaur bones. I have a few of those at home. Just lift them up. They're very lightweight. Just dinosaur bones. Not mineralized. Proteins in dinosaur. You know what happens to proteins when something dies? They come apart. Red blood cells. DNA. DNA has a half-life about 521 years. So after several thousand years, all the DNA is gone. We are finding fragments of DNA in there. Doesn't mean we're going to clone them, folks. Don't worry about the cloning. I have a whole other section on cloning. It doesn't work as well as people think. And carbon-14. See, after about 60,000 years, all the carbon-14 should be out of those bones. And for those of you who think, some people say, oh, contamination from the soil, carbon-14 got in that way. No, because you know what we have? We find a consistent amount of carbon-14 in these bones all around the world, which means they all died at the same time. We win dinosaurs, don't we? we should never lose the dinosaur argument. Everything I've told you about the dinosaurs, you need to start teaching your young children. And in Sunday school class, be teaching this. Here's another one. Where should scientists find dinosaurs? Well, according to them, should be way down in the geologic column, shouldn't it? Because if they died out 65 million years ago and lived up to 200 million years ago, the dinosaur would be found way down deep. You know where we find them? On the top layers. You know what kind of soil we find them in? Mud. It's called sedimentary rocks. You know what sedimentary rocks are? Right. Water, that it's sediments laid down by water. What would do that all over the world?
A flood.
A flood, exactly. Dinosaurs are a great testimony to a worldwide flood. And we find them way up at the top, not way down there. So dinosaur conclusion. Dinosaurs did not live millions of years ago. The Bible and scientific evidence both support that. Dinosaurs lived at the same time as people, created on day 6. And the Bible gives a good description of a dinosaur-like creature in Job 40. There's another interesting creature in the Bible. Anybody know its name? It's also in the book of Job?
Leviathan.
You know what it says? Shoots out sparks of fire. Are we talking about a fire-breathing dragon here? Has anybody seen a real fire-breathing dragon here? Now, I'm going to give you a reason. I teach a lot of first through sixth graders, and I teach at their level, but they are scary. Do you know first through sixth graders are really scary people? Because you never know what they're going to say. I was doing a first through sixth grade class. I guess there were about 200 of them out there from the whole school. And I asked, anybody seen a fire-breathing dragon? A little hand in the back goes up. I say, you seen a fire-breathing dragon? He said, yes. I had to ask, where did you see this fire-breathing dragon? Here's his answer. Last night when my mother was talking to my father. And you have to change the subject real fast. That's why they're scary. So the Bible does have answers. We just barely covered. There's a whole area to biblical apologetics that we haven't covered. But this is just a start. We've covered some of the toughest ones here. We have a one-day advanced class we do, and in there we cover how to answer the question, how can you call God good when he allows bad things to happen? Incidentally, as a Christian, you should never ask that question. That's an atheist-type question. As a Christian, I'm going to tell you, if you ask me that question, I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to give you an answer until you ask the right question. So the right question is, why doesn't God kill me right now because I'm a sinner? That's the right question. He loves you. Very good answer. Excellent answer. Very quickly, don't forget the Youth Pastor Conference. We went over 100 there, youth pastors and Christian educators. Pick up a brochure, give it to your youth pastor. If you know a teacher, a Christian teacher, whether in the public school or Christian school, and it could be a youth leader in your church, that's anybody teaching youth, we want them there. It's going to be a very powerful time for them, and we're going to work with them and get them to start teaching what the Bible teaches, a literal six-day creation to their students, and get rid of the compromise in our Christian schools. So pick one of those up. Don't forget the five-day class. Again, we only take 40 students there. We always have returning students. We don't count them as the 40. Every year we have 5 to 6 or 7 returning students. Why? They've never seen anything like this. They just want to take part in it again. We've had people come back 3 times to see this class. It is different than anything else you'll ever be in. How many have attended that class? We have several. We've had several at this conference. I think up to 4 have been at this conference that have attended that class, and they're not dead yet. They're still living.
So the push-ups didn't kill them?
No. Oh, incidentally, there's 3 of us that co-teach the course. The other 2 are nice. And don't forget, if you want the essay contest, you can. I'll give you a hint here, let you know. If you don't win, if you're not one of the top 3 winners, if you've submitted an essay, we'll pay part of your cost anyway, just because you made the effort to do this. If we don't want money to be an issue why people cannot learn God's word. We would rather take the loss and get you educated. That's our ministry. Our ministry started with, we're going to live by faith. And we have a newsletter. And again, if you know somebody who'd like to help support us, we need that support to continue doing what we're doing. Any questions here? Anybody have a question? I know we're going to have a Q&A session, but I'm going to ask the questions then. Anybody have a question on any area of creation? Yes.
So what happened to the dinosaurs after they got off the earth?
Good question. What happened to the dinosaurs? Well, we don't know for sure. There's several possibilities. People may have killed them. Because you don't want to live next to a reptile this big that sees you as food. Other animals may have killed them, eaten their eggs, or they just died of natural causes. Because after the flood, the earth was very different. The whole landscape, everything was different. Could have been any combination of those. We don't know. But we don't believe they've been dead for more than several hundred years. That's the best we can do because we didn't see the last one. Are dinosaurs completely extinct? And here's how I answer. As far as we know, they are extinct because we haven't explored everywhere on this planet. And follow on that question. Are reptiles today dinosaurs? No, because there's an anatomical difference. Dinosaurs had their legs directly underneath them. Reptiles today go like this. So based on that anatomy, we don't classify reptiles today as dinosaurs. We had a question over here.
Okay, dinosaurs would have been vegetarians before the flood. So why would they have necessarily become meat eaters once they came off of the ark?
Okay.
I know that man did, but that doesn't necessarily mean a dinosaur did. Right.
We weren't supposed to eat meat. No, so I'd say we weren't supposed to be eating meat until after the flood. Now, the dinosaurs started off as vegetarians before the fall. After the fall, we don't know what they were doing. They could have been eating each other.
After the fall.
After the fall, it could have been happening. But we weren't, as people, maybe some people were eating meat too. We weren't allowed to by God until after the flood. Doesn't mean we weren't doing it or some people weren't doing it. And we don't know about other animals not killing each other. Because all of creation was cursed that time. So they may have been gnawing at each other.
So you think that a dinosaur could have been a meat eater?
Oh, yes. At some point, they were meat eaters. And we have found pretty good evidence in the corpulites. And you know what corpulites? Dinosaur left over. Dumb. Yes, we have. And we found bone marks on some of the bones that are teeth marks.
That would have been before the flood.
Yes, most likely before the flood. That was a good question. I like that. Good, thank you. Okay, I think we're just about out of time. We'll have a whole Q&A time. And all questions go to the other guy. I'm all done. I'm here to have a good time now. Just eat. That's all I have left to do. And talk to any astronomer I might find.